Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production. Welcome to another episode of the Startup Podcast, Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. We're doing it from the Metro Business Center at the corner of Dundee and Douglas in Louisville's Highlands. My name is Dan Vonderhyde. This week, we sit down with Mike Pfeiffer from Deceiver Outdoors. He was one of the hot dozen for this year. I've known Mike for several years. I know his family. I think a whole lot of them. They're great people, and I was excited to see his name pop up. I knew he was working on this thing, and I knew he'd been doing it for several years, but I had no idea how much he had put into it and how much it had grown and the potential that he's carrying with him. So it's a great episode. I must admit that I hit the wrong button when I recorded it, so use the internal microphone here on the computer monitor instead of my super-duper microphones that I have on sitting on the table. So I apologize for the minor sound issues, but I do encourage you to listen to the entire thing. It's a great episode simply because it's a guy who came up with an idea and is not going to stop with that. And he has the full support of his business partner, who is also his wife. And it's not a warm and fuzzy story, but it certainly is a very real story of a guy who is a good, honest, hardworking dude and had an idea and is running with it. And it's encouraging to anybody who's a tinkerer or an inventor or somebody even who has an idea for an app or something to find out through Mike's lessons the hard way and the rewarding way of doing this startup thing. So I hope you really enjoy it. I really appreciate you spending some time with me each week and paying me some attention. If you happen to be a startup or an investor in Cincinnati, Lexington, Indianapolis, or Nashville, I'm tinkering with the idea of making this more of a regional footprint, getting out and talking to people outside of our specific metro area to see what's going on out there and hear great stories from around the region. So if you wouldn't mind dropping me a note, my email address is startup@louisville.am. Anybody can suggest a guest. If you have a company you think might want to appear on the podcast, send it my way, startup@louisville.am. Of course, you can always support the show in three ways. You can share the content with somebody you know and you think can benefit from it. Subscribe to us on iTunes or on Stitcher, or of course, you can scratch out a check and sponsor this thing to help me keep the lights on here at the Metro Business Center. Enough of my yakking, though. Here's Mike Pfeiffer with Deceiver Outdoors on the Startup Podcast.
Is that kind of why you saw that there was a, and maybe other cities are like this, but it's been very encouraging the amount of help that's out there for us and now the networks that we're getting involved with. The different organizations and everything else that's helping us make these decisions on how to move forward and how to grow. So I would think that with what you're doing here, that there is a market for it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've said it in the past, it's something that I just sort of accidentally happened upon. I had an interest in startups and in technology mostly. Just because I knew people, and I had those conversations all the time, just over coffee or just, you know, via email or whatever it was. So I met all these people. And then when I picked up on the concept of podcasting and the ease of consuming that stuff through, you know, I got a smartphone. And it changed the game because podcasts used to be a little more difficult to listen to. You had to listen on your computer or you had to download a file and drag it over here and plug in your phone and all that stuff. Now it's just a couple of taps on your screen. And you have whatever you want at your fingertips at all times. So it was sort of when that came across my radar, I thought, I could do one of these. What would I do a podcast on? What would I talk about? I could talk about guitars, but I don't know that much about guitars. I certainly don't know about the local music scene because I'm married with children and I don't get out of the house very often, and I couldn't do that sort of thing. But I started listing out people that I knew that owned businesses, and I just started calling them and saying, would you be interested in me sitting down with you for 45 minutes and talking about what you do? And people said yes. So here I am. And then I started digging in deeper, and you meet the people in the investment community, and you meet the people that are working in startups, and there are more than I could ever imagine around town. I just haven't heard of all of them. And I want them to reach out to me because I want to. I think that that's part of what's going on in Louisville that doesn't get enough publicity. This is the, like, I hate the term good news of Louisville, but it's kind of, this is progress. This is people moving forward. This is not the crime report. It's not what's on fire and where, and it's not, you know, weather. Mm-hmm. If you watch the news, that's just sort of what's out there right now. And this is more human focused. This is real people doing real things to move the city forward. So that's where I'm. And then
that's cool.
I can't stop. I love it. So if I can just find somebody to sponsor me, then I'll be fine. So I guess we're rolling now, by the way. So we can talk about you instead of me.
Fantastic.
talk to me about it. I've known you for several years, but I've never known you to have a day job. Have you had one? Like, did you punch the clock at any point in your life?
I did back in high school, and that's kind of what got me into the remodeling business, which is what I did for the past 11 years now. And in high school, I worked for a company called U.S. Specialties, and we installed commercial and accessories, so handrails, bathroom partitions.
Okay.
Really more just kind of remodeling commercial buildings. And, you know, Mom and Dad gave us a great gift, and they paid for our high school education. You know, I went to Trinity, Tommy mm-hmm. and Bobby went to Trinity, Andrea went to Assumption. Mm-hmm. And part of the deal was that we would have to pay for college. So I went to the University of Kentucky.
I've yet to strike that deal with my children, but trust me, the contract is
Murray State was actually, at the time, and probably still is, less expensive than Trinity. Well, I went to UK for 2 years and then transferred to Murray State. And that's where really I got hired on as an apprentice to a guy that was starting his own company. And literally he had just started a remodeling business.
So he was right out of the gate.
Right out of the gate. Within 2 months, he just needed a helper. Murray being a small college town, he just needed somebody to hold boards and kind of just help him keep jobs moving along. But through that, for 3 years, I turned into kind of his apprentice, into one of his lead guys. And at Murray, I studied furniture making and business, and had a passion for carpentry mm-hmm. and woodworking, but also had to pay the bills, so the remodeling part just kind of fit. So graduated from Murray and moved back to Louisville, broke. And moved back in with my parents and kind of didn't have a job.
It's a great American story. You're not the only one.
No. And really just kind of started out in Springhurst. At a friend of the family needed a bathroom remodeled. And I went in and kind of just didn't know any better. That's what I'd been doing for the past 3 years.
But you knew the craft of it and how to do things. Did you know about running a business? Did you learn any of that from your other guy?
I didn't.
But that's what I thought you were going to tell me. It was like, yeah, and I was able to watch how he set up the accounts and how he worked with this guy and how he did all the legal stuff. And
quite the contrary.
Okay.
It was just I knew how to do the job, had a decent idea on what to charge. It took me years to really realize what you needed to charge, all the overhead and mm-hmm. what it really takes.
Nobody accounts for the gasoline in their car.
It takes yeah. a while before you realize what it really takes to run a business, whether it's remodeling or now manufacturing and retailing. But I had about a month's worth of work from that one job and called my old college buddy and roommate, Nick. And said, Nick, I've got about a month's worth of work. Why don't you move down here? He was still living in Murray. And let's give this thing a go. And that was 11 years ago. And
you did my kitchen.
How long ago was that? That was probably more like 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, it was, because we were pregnant with the second
of
our, and she's almost 7. So, yeah, 7 years ago. How about that? I totally forgot about that until just now. It's like, oh my gosh, you totally did my kitchen.
Yep. So that actually, the remodeling, I do enjoy remodeling. I do enjoy the carpentry, but my true passion has always been the outdoors. and whether it's camping, hunting, fishing, four wheeling, just being outside and just with the people and then the camaraderie and the sitting around the campfire and cooking out and everything else. So it always was a dream of mine to get into the outdoor industry. And then about 4 years ago, we would go hunting out west, and the basically, do you want me to get into
like
this whole weird thing started?
You're heading off my questions, which is fine. Go ahead. People, they don't want to hear me. They want to hear you.
So, I'm an avid duck hunter and goose hunter, just waterfowl hunter in general. And in waterfowl hunting, you've got decoys that work on land and decoys that work on water. Well, okay. Traditionally, let's say for the past 50 years, everybody pretty much hunted on water, and they had what were called floating decoys, and they have a keel on the bottom of them. And so the past 10 years, the market has kind of shifted, and people realize that these ducks and geese feed out in fields, and so they go from water to field, back to water, back to field, and then they roost on water. So people started changing their hunting techniques and hunting.
Now, and you realize this because you were one of those people.
Correct.
So you saw an opportunity.
Absolutely. Okay. So what kind of the aha moment was a dozen of those floating decoys that I literally had hundreds of. You can get them anywhere from $30 to, let's just say, $50. But a dozen of the land decoys, you'll have anywhere from $300 to $400 in.
Oh, man.
And we're going out west, and we're putting out hundreds of decoys to mimic what you're seeing in these fields. And you're setting up this spread. So you can do the math real quick. If you're putting out a couple hundred decoys, you can have $5,000 to $10,000.
That's crazy.
In a spread.
Right.
Well, I had hundreds of these floating decoys, and I said, there's got to be a way for me to use these floating decoys on both land and water. And that's how kind of Deceiver Outdoors and Deceiver Stakes started. All I did was make this metal rod that you can slide the keel of your water decoy on, put it, and now take your water decoy and use it in a land application, whether it's on a dry bank, on a sandbar, out in an ag field. Mm-hmm. And it was that moment that literally I was down in my basement, and as a hunter, and I think a lot of other hunters and outdoorsmen, you know, sports guys, they love watching sports, and I'm not I do enjoy sports, but if I'm going to watch TV, I'm watching, you know, the outdoor channel. Mm-hmm. And my wife would see.
But you'd rather be out in the field anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. But my wife would see all these silly commercials, and, you know, you got deer piss and you got raccoon cover scent, all, and she says, you guys will buy absolutely anything. When are you going to come up with some stupid idea that hunters will buy?
And it's funny you should ask.
And literally, I was down in my basement, and it was after one of our trips out west, and I had this drawing, and it kind of looked like a bent coat hanger, just that would slide on this keel, and I came up, and I said, Val, I did it. And she's like, what are you talking about? I was like, I came up with one of those silly ideas that I think a lot of hunters will buy. And that was 4 years ago, and I got extremely excited and nervous at the same time. Like, you know, I got to go quick.
You got to move before somebody else figures it out. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I did. We went ahead and I explained the whole process to her, and we jumped right into the whole patent process.
Oh, wow.
And went ahead.
See, that's not the next step that I saw coming.
I kind of didn't know any better. I just felt like that was my only way to protect myself.
Okay. So that was your thought process, is I've got something, I've got to keep this mine.
Absolutely, yes. So we did. We filed a provisional patent, which gave us 1 year to figure out what we have and what we can do, learn more about the outdoor industry, learn more about the market, what kind of potential is there, and come up with a plan on how we can launch this product. Because I've been in the service industry for, you know, at that point, 9 years. I didn't know anything about the retail industry. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, at that point, Val was on board, and
that's pretty key.
It was critical.
You get your significant other on board, things happen a lot faster.
It has been.
You bet.
She was on board, you know, from day one, and very much even still. She's the foundation of the company. She allows me to be. She not only runs the service company, the remodeling business, but also she runs Deceiver Outdoors on the back end, taking care of all the customer service.
Wow.
All the packaging, you know, when I'm out there making a sale, she makes sure everything that we agree to happens in a timely manner. And it's critical because for a two-man operation, right now it's just me and her doing it. There's no way possible that there's just not enough time in the day.
Well, I want to come back to all that stuff.
Okay.
I do want to ask you, I want to figure out how two people can make this thing happen and what's going to happen in the future. But I wanted to, you get from a place where you think, okay, I did it. This is something that people are going to want. Well, then what was the process for you to find out that people actually did want it? Like, how did you talk to people? How did you figure that out that people are going to buy what it is you're
so
making?
The first year was extremely exciting and fun and an absolute roller coaster. So it started, I literally made a jig and I built, I believe it was like 200 or 300 of them in my garage. And
just you?
Yep, just
with
me.
With some wire and a vise, maybe?
Yep,
so you can bend things around?
That's exactly what it was.
Hey, I'm thinking like an engineer, aren't I?
I took a, excuse me, a hard plastic block, made my jigs, drilling them and kind of, and I don't want to leave out at somewhere within the first probably 3 months, I filed for a patent, I had the concept, and I showed my good friend John Michael. And at that point, I was running out of time and running out of money real quick. John Michael's also an extremely good salesman, good friend.
And this was all your money, by the way, right? This is something that you had set aside to say, okay, I'm going to dedicate this money to.
At first, you're exactly right.
Okay.
Yes. We're doing it. We bootstrapped the whole thing. Actually, still to this day, we bootstrapped 100%.
Okay.
And now going on, you know, this is year 3 to 4.
Self-supporting at this point?
It is.
Okay.
We haven't taken a paycheck, but we're proud to say that this past year, we didn't have to take anything out of our savings and
put
in.
Okay, good.
But there's more to that than just, I'll tell you more later about we got a grant.
Oh, nice.
That GLI helped us get, which was absolutely critical.
Yeah.
But back to kind of the start, I showed good friend John Michael the product, and he got excited about it and shared a lot of the same passion that I did.
He's a hunter?
A hunter, okay. Outdoorsman.
Okay.
And it was that you know, you got to be kidding me that no one else there out there has thought about this. So he got on board, and at that point, I said, all right, if you want to do this, we're going to do this together. And we became partners in Deceiver Outdoors. So it was very much for the first year, me, John Michael, and Val. And kind of that first moment of let's do a test market, we had a couple hundred. I think we had maybe 150, 175 boxes. One product, we had a covered trailer. And in the state of Kentucky or in Western Kentucky, there were 5 stores that I was familiar with just from being a hunter.
Uh-huh.
And they were in a good waterfowl area. So called them all up. I said, you know, I'm asking for 15 minutes of your time. I just want to show you a new product. I'm a local guy. And if you'll just take a look at it, let me know what you think. It's not like anything that you have. And all 5 of the stores agreed to at least give me 15 minutes.
Okay.
So me and John Michael went. Took his truck, my truck.
You've never been a salesman in the past, per se.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so
it's a pretty good success rate for calling up and getting appointments, man. 100%.
Well, and that long story short, we came home from that trip and with an empty trailer. Every store picked up our product, and we were, I mean, just pumped to say the least. You know,
yeah.
we'd been working probably 6-8 months on a product, getting packaging, getting labels, getting, you know, and we did all this through our network in town. We used companies here in town and pulled favors. I called on old customers that I knew were either graphic designers,
mm-hmm.
or I had remodeled their bathroom and knew that they had a label company or a printing company. And we did things as tight as you possibly could. And after that trip...
How did you know what all you needed to do? Was it just finding your way around in the dark? And then somebody say, hey, have you thought about a UPC code or an inventory system or, you know, all of that?
A lot of it was just we kind of learned the hard way year one of you'd go to a store and they'd pick it up and say, okay, well, we, like you just said, you need the UPC, it needs to be on the front.
Okay.
Then we were constantly comparing ourselves to other products. You'd go in all these stores and say, okay, what draws my attention and what am I buying? What am I looking? And we kind of duplicated what other people were doing at first. We've since kind of tried to differentiate ourselves and really stick out on the shelf and not blend in like everybody else, do it a little bit different. But at first, that's what we were doing. We were looking at other products and kind of seeing how their packaging and all that went. And then also just kind of using the resources that we had with the box company, the label company, and making the best out of what we could afford. So after that trip, we kind of knew that, okay, these stores will buy it, people will buy it, and we said we've got a limited budget. And
did you make enough money to just do a second run? Did you have all this money in your pocket? Like, what do we? Okay, now we have to go make more of this stuff.
That's exactly
how
what
can
we
do
did.
It more efficiently so we can pad our margin a little bit, maybe.
We have every dollar and every dime that we've made, we put back into the company,
okay,
to kind of just grow the company and get us to where we are today. But our main focus that year one, there's a company called Max Prairie Wings, and they're, I would say, one of the top three distributors of waterfowl product.
Okay.
We said we need them to allow us the opportunity. If we can get them, they put out 1.4 million catalogs a year to our exact market.
Okay.
I mean, just to waterfowl hunters. You know, it's like a 90-page of nothing but gear for waterfowl guys.
Wow.
So I was like, we can get in there. We're going to reach our market as, you know, and we felt like the as quickly as possible. So we had, it cost us about $5,000 or $6,000, and we got into a show down in Texas called NBS, which is a buying show.
Okay.
We knew they were going to be there.
So you went in with a plan. This is the one person I need to meet.
You got
from
it.
That one particular catalog.
Yep.
You and everybody else.
Yep. And looking back, and now going to these buying shows, we had one product. You know, you get a 10 by 10 booth, and there's only so many ways you can bend, you know, make a bit piece of metal look
right.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But we had this old booth jazzed up, and it was funny because people would come up and they'd say, wow, you're here with one product. And, you know, we just didn't know any better at the
time.
One
product that you do well. There's nothing wrong with that.
And we believed in it, and we still are extremely passionate about it. And basically, Max, we saw them. They dug the product. They liked it, and they picked us up.
Okay.
So
that was when?
That was year one. So that would have been the 2011.
Okay.
So that kind of started everything. We're like, all right, if this number one waterfowl distributor likes our product and they can sell it, then we know we've got something here. And it's kind of...
Did you run into the... like, that's the sort of thing, if you ever watch Shark Tank, they go and say, I have all these orders. I don't have any way to make this stuff. That's why I need this money. Did you run into that problem where all of a sudden you had more orders than you could fill?
That
would have been a nice problem to have.
We didn't at the time.
Okay.
No, I wish we had. We had a great partnership with our manufacturer. And
so you're not making them in your basement anymore?
Yeah, it went from the garage to... manually bending them to a pneumatic bending machine to now a CNC machine that can punch them out very efficiently. And I was constantly striving to get, you had to have uniformity and it had to be quality. And once we got to that level where a CNC machine was building them, I could... Local manufacturer.
Okay.
It got my margins down where I needed to be, and I could produce them in quantities that I had them on hand and I was able to fulfill these orders. So I never had that big push where I couldn't literally fill orders. Now it's happened in this year, which is exciting. We've had we're at a stage now where we've got rep groups and we've grown to where now we've got nationwide and moving up into Canada. So we're gearing up for next year to be a banner year for us.
Is it a seasonal thing though? Is there definitely a curve during the year where people are buying it, or is it a 12-month a year deal?
Absolutely a seasonal thing.
Okay.
And that's just in the waterfowl industry. So what we did between year two and three, I saw that, my accounts receivable and we were just making money from, let's just say September through February. So we took that same, I'd like to say we have, kind of a niche market where the people in the outdoor industry make great decoys, they make great products, but the accessories for those products, they skimp on to make their margins.
Mm-hmm.
So we have focused on that market, and we now make accessories for deer hunting, for trail cameras, for turkey hunting, for predator hunting, for dove hunting, and really we focus. I don't want to be a decoy company, but I want to be the hunting solution specialist. So when people have problems with products that they have out there, it might just be a stake, a stand, some accessory, they come to us and we solve it. And it has allowed us now to go from one product up to 15 different products and not be so seasonal, because you got deer season east.
But you never saw that coming.
I'd hope that it would.
Oh, okay.
But
all right.
It's kind of transformed into that.
Has it just gotten way beyond what you ever imagined?
No.
So you have a bigger vision for...
Absolutely.
Okay.
When I got into it, one of the things I had to do, and through the advice of my wife, I love the R&D department, the inventing, the bringing a product to market, the engineering part. And I had several products that I was developing right away. One of them was the amphibious stake, the one I told you about being our first product.
Mm-hmm.
And Val very wisely said, you've got to focus. I was spending money on developing this product, And Val, who also, she runs the company but runs all the books as well, said, if you don't focus, you're going to spend all your money and you're not going to bring a product to market.
One single product.
So we took a step back and said, what's the one product that we can kind of build a foundation and get established and open some of those doors to allow us to bring new products into the market? And we thought that once you open a door and you establish a relationship with these outdoor companies, it's going to be easier to bring new products. And that has been true. That now that we have these relationships and we service these accounts and they know that we're, honest, good people, our products are made in America, and that most importantly, people buy our stuff.
Uh-huh.
When I go to them with a new concept and all these new ideas, I don't have to go through all the loops to get the guy on the phone.
Because you've backed it up 100% from day one.
Absolutely. And that's been critical. That's been a big change from year two to three. That has allowed us to grow and bring these new products to market and really got the snowball rolling and created quite a buzz. So,
what do you think is in the past, you're in year three, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the most important partnership that you've had other than your wife, who's clearly the brains behind the whole thing?
Yeah, she, and that's not an exaggeration.
What was the most important step that you made to say, was it going to the show in Texas? Was that was the deal, or was it like one particular phone call or step that you made that really threw fire on the whole thing? That maybe it even took some courage to do. Like this could not have been easy.
Well, I'm trying to think what that one thing. You'd ask what a partnership, and definitely it has been me and Val and I John Michael had to kind of take a step out due to time constraints. Like, the it turned into, we realized real quick that it's not easy to pay the bills. I guess, long story short, it took full-time commitment, and it wasn't paying the bills. It was a full-time job almost immediately.
Yeah.
And I'm a very persistent and stubborn individual, so I wasn't going to give up. We were still getting all these great signs, but it cost more than you could ever imagine. It took a lot more time than than I thought. So you had to just stick with it, and we just kept grinding. And it turned into where it was just a little too much work with John Michael's full-time job and his family commitment. And we just had an agreement that we kind of shifted our agreement and took on different roles. He's still a silent partner in the business.
Good.
But now it was just primarily Val and I were able to make decisions and move forward. And if I hadn't been running my own remodeling company, there's no way I would have been able to juggle both either. Mm-hmm. It just took that. I was constantly having to juggle both jobs and change hats every day to make this thing keep moving. Because I found out real quick, if I'm not out there promoting it and pushing it, no one is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was the spearhead that made all this thing happen. A year ago, kind of a big turning point, I met a guy named Kevin Brooks out of Litchfield, Kentucky. And Kevin had a line of products that Kevin has a very successful lumber company and also an avid outdoorsman. And he had a product, and kind of it fit right in line with what I was doing. It was for duck hunting. It was a metal product, and it was an accessory. And through a mutual friend, someone told Kevin, you need to contact Mike. And I'd been now 2 years in and kind of had some doors open. We went hunting. I used his product, really liked it. And Kevin asked me if I would bring his product to market.
Mm-hmm.
His one product has turned into another 6 or 7 products through this auger base that we're using. It's kind of like a mounting system.
So he's selling on your through your channels?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And that Kevin's products, they're all under the Deceiver name, but Kevin's products, along with my products, have created now even more buzz. And now I don't have 5 products, we're up to 15, and I'm not so seasonal. So now these big stores, Cabela's, Bass Pro, Gander Mountain, Dick's Sporting Goods, Academy, they're more interested in me. And now we've got all our meetings over the next week to month, because I've got a product line, and I'm not just one SKU, and I'm not just seasonal. So for them to bring you into their system, I'm much more appealing to them.
So that's the next big logical step, is for you to get into a wider distribution network where you're selling online and you're selling through the catalog and maybe some stores around Kentucky.
Absolutely.
But you're not, don't have a nationwide retail distribution at this point? Is that
right now we're in 24 stores across the nation, but we're not in those big Shields Sporting Goods, which is a big one of the top three, but they're more of a conservative company. But your Bass Pro, your Cabela's, Gander, those are your really big when you're talking about quantity.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that you have to have. In my opinion, they will be critical for us to make this full time, full paying.
Building something that's going to outlive you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's the key, baby. That's what everybody wants to do, right?
Yeah.
So how do you guys split up the time then? So you and Val are both each running two full businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Are you like 4 hours a day on one, 4 hours on the other? Are you doing the remodeling work yourself, or do you have a crew of guys doing that? Like, how
I've got a crew of guys. I got a great crew of guys that absolutely allow me to. We meet at the shop every morning at 7:30, get them scheduled. Val gets the kids to school and everything set up, and then we kind of touch base and say, okay, here's the priorities for today. And after, if the guys are doing their job and doing it well, then I don't have to, look over their shoulders. So we get them squared away, send them out, and they're extremely capable. These guys have been with me for some of them 3 and 5 years. These are also the guys that I hope to take over the company during this transition period to where I can really focus 100% on Deceiver, because it requires it at this time. Can't afford to do it, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah,
the remodeling business is paying the bills.
Yeah.
But it is looking like within the next 6 months, we'll be able to make that transition where I will be able to go full time. So
you may be the exception to the rule, but if on a scale of 1 to 10, your perspective is so skewed. How smart is it to go into business with your wife? I mean, is that a challenge for you at times?
It is a challenge.
You butt heads on certain issues that you're trying to work through, and
are
you able to compartmentalize those conversations?
We handle situations differently, and we deal with stress differently. One of the biggest things with owning your own company is, and I realized it early on, is that you go to bed with it, you wake up with it, it's there on the weekends. And I feel comfortable saying, if you don't have that mentality, then you're probably not going to be successful, because it is absolutely critical. So Valerie has an advertising background, a marketing background, and she's extremely smart and organized. But she hadn't had that, had never worked for herself or worked for with me.
Yeah.
Or
I can edit the four out if you want me to.
So, you know, when things get stressful and deadlines and funds get tight, which they do, and
sure.
I focus on solutions. And she focuses on the problem, and it's kind of a good match, because I'm very aware of the problems, but I'm going to focus on the solution, fix it, and move on and keep going. And sometimes, you know, she can get a little caught up in the problem, and it's just we had to learn that our differences, and then, you know, kind of work with it, I guess.
Okay.
But it is.
That's not an overnight process, I would imagine.
No. Not at all. And it's still a constant, you know, we're learning, you know, each other's traits and strengths and weaknesses. And
if you both had the same skill set, you wouldn't get very far.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And actually right now we're going through trying to get accurate forecasts and trying to build a business plan for 2014. One of the exercises we're going through, right? What's Mike's strengths and what's Valerie's strengths and what's Mike's weaknesses?
Do you have somebody helping you with that?
We do.
Like a professional advisor or a counselor.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's
good.
Through kind of GLI.
Okay. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
The grant and the hot dozen and the whole thing and how all that happened and
how we doing
go.
On time.
I don't have a time limit, you know.
Okay.
Go. This is fascinating. This is great.
So between year 2 and 3, we still only had one. We maybe had 3 different products. We took that one simple concept of the decoy stake, and we developed a stand. So it was basically 3 products, but they did the same thing. And we started reaching out here in town to see what kind of programs, what kind of help is out there for startup companies. And that's when we were introduced to GLI and met Tendai.
Mm-hmm.
And Tendai has been absolutely...
He's the best.
He's been awesome. Yeah. And I knew Tendai.
Great enthusiasm for everything.
Oh, he's a great guy and genuinely wants to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
And has an incredible network. And I believe he just moved, got a promotion, mm-hmm. and doing very well. So, but Tendai at the time kind of set up a meeting. We went down to GLI and I think we might have had the 3 products, and we said, all right, here's what we got. Here's what we're doing. And we're trying to grow this company to be a Kentucky, you know. Ultimately, we just kind of said, here's what we want to do. And he said, well, here's some of your options, and here's some of the things that Kentucky, you know, that we have to offer and that are available out there. And one of them was the KEF, the Kentucky Entrepreneurial Fund.
Okay.
And it was a contest where we had to fill out, it started with just a we submitted an application, told them who we were, what we did, and it was about a five-part process. 60 companies applied for it, and we did the first, the application, and they called us back, and then we did a phone interview, and they kept asking us more questions, and it ultimately ended with an interview with kind of a set of judges. That's not right. It was more the people that were making the decision.
Right. Well, they're judges. Funding. Whatever. So, you know, don't sugarcoat it.
And we left that meeting feeling good that the presentation went extremely well. They were complimentary. And long story short, we found out we won the grant.
Out of 60 companies,
one company out of Louisville, which was us, and I think two companies out of Lexington won the grant.
Okay.
And it was, that allowed us, what that grant, we didn't have any stipulation on what, well, there were some stipulations, but they allowed us to use it in ways that we felt were best for Deceiver Outdoors. So we were able to focus on marketing. We were able to focus on product development. We were able to focus on labels and set up a travel schedule and a marketing schedule for the last year that if we hadn't got that grant, we would have had to raise capital. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. It allowed us.
Are you opposed to that?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
And that's at a stage where we are right now. It looks like we will be raising capital.
Okay.
But it allowed us to go another year of not having to and keeping that equity and establishing more relationships, getting in more stores.
Well, it increases the value of what, you know, like your valuation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, growing the company as yours until it comes to a time where your valuation is maybe up here instead of here.
Yes.
That way you're keeping more for more. Yeah. All right.
So that whole grant was critical. And
you're making this sound easy, Mike. Seriously. I mean, I know this is a, you know, 40-minute conversation or something, but it's, I know it hasn't been.
No,
there's no
it
way.
Hasn't. And if we can talk about the pitfalls and the amount of time. And,
well, all right. Well, just real quick.
Yep.
Number one pitfall or the number one lesson you've learned from coming up with an idea and then taking it to market?
I think I've already said it once, but it has taken way more time, way more energy, way more money than I ever dreamt. We have invested a lot of our savings, if not most of our savings. We've had to sacrifice a lot of family time.
Mm-hmm. And I know how important that is to you. I mean,
it is.
I know your family. It's number one.
Very tough.
You bet.
And I've got a 4-year-old and a seven month old. And my 4-year-old he's my buddy. And, you know, his name's Hunter. So,
yeah, how about that? Yeah.
And he has figured out that dad travels a lot. And to be blunt, it sucks.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I leave on weekends and long trips and having to travel so much and be away from them, that's probably the hardest part of this whole business.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity is huge, and we've got a lot of good going for us, but the sacrifices are huge. And that goes back to, if I didn't have Val's support, there's no way I could do it because family is so important, and there's no way that I could be away from that much and still keep the company going, still keep the family together, keep everything and feel good about it. I mean, I'm sure you could, a lot of people probably do it. And sacrifice a lot. But I'd like to think that our family is still a priority and we're still, I guess this is still a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, this really might, if all the, I forgot what number I'm on. This might be one of my favorite podcasts that I've done because it's the, probably the most real story, and you're very detailed, I got to hand it to you, but of somebody who, you know,
hopefully not too much.
No, no, you're
boring
fine.
People.
No, you're fine, but because the lessons are so, they seem so obvious, but they're not until you hear them from somebody who's actually lived through it and knows. And you're not even done yet. You have lessons yet to be learned. You bet. But somebody who can advise, who's been present for the whole thing, and you haven't slept through any of this. I know.
Yeah.
I mean, you're slept walk through it. You just, you know, you seem to be engaged with the whole thing, and the lessons that you've learned, and the way that you're able to communicate those. So, anyhow, I think this talk is a must listen for anybody who wants to invent something or start their own thing, whatever that might be. That you can't go into it with one toe. You got to jump into it with both feet and you know, drag other people with you, kicking and screaming.
That's very true.
So in your case, it worked out that, you know, your wife is ultra supportive, and you know, there's nothing that's more important than that. So.
No.
Or you. Yeah. So, this great story. I am going to cut you off, though.
I understand.
So this is the longest podcast I've had in a long time, but I think it's worth it. So thank you for sharing with us. All right.